Chapter 13. Julia watched the crackling life of the nighttime city through the Rolls-Royce's tinted windows, impatient for the ride to be over, the drama she'd conceived to unfold. She could almost believe they were driving through some German metropolis. Peterborough's new Eastfield district possessed the same frantic pace and power, the strut that came from being number one. Its buildings were post-warming, laid out in a precise geometrical array, like Manhattan before the Anarchy March. They were foreign-funded, a thorn in the side of the PSP, physical evidence the party couldn't fulfill its promises. All of them followed the same paleo-Spanish theme, six-story, marble or cut stone, with long balconies that sported a profusion of greenery and flowers. Smart, uniformed doormen stood outside the gingery smoke-glassed lobbies. Wealth was everywhere, in clothes, jewellery, salon beauty, in the absence of bicycles and graffiti. The road was clogged with traffic. Gas-electric hybrid BMWs and Mercs cruised up and down, their headlights and taillights two contrasting severed ribbons of light. The folksy tables of pavement cafes were spread out under brightly striped awnings, alternating with arched entrances into small arcades of exclusive shops. Brightly lit windows full of designer label clothes and esoteric gear silhouetted the fast-moving pedestrians, painting their faces in cool neon tones. Soft, warm rain had fallen earlier in the evening, its residual sheen reflecting gaudy Bioloom ads in long, wavering flames from walls and paving slabs. But the prosperity was only a few blocks across, a ghetto of the rich. She remembered Grandpa saying that New Eastfield was a seed, that in a proper economy this kind of lifestyle would spread out like a microbe culture, consuming and changing its surrounding neighbourhoods, right out to the city boundaries. He'd wanted the new conservatives to build cores like it in every English city, showcases for a top-led society, the acceptable face of capitalism. Good old Grandpa, an eternal optimist. But there were a lot of people enjoying the balmy evening street life.
"Are you sure Bill will be there?"
Caterina asked. Julia turned away from the window, back to the subdued oyster shade inside the car. Her friend was wearing a skin-tight black tube dress. A slash down the front was loosely laced up, showing the deep cleft between her breasts. Brazen. But Julia was forced to admit she looked wonderful. Her hair was a fluffy gold cloud.
"He was invited,"
Julia said tonelessly. Bill Ye Samanza, the hottest, meanest rock and roller in the history of the world, ever. Even cats would look ordinary around his groupies. She smiled in the shadows. Cats had only agreed to come after she'd promised her Bill would be there.
"Well, Julie dear, anyone can invite him. Having him turn up is different. He'll be there. Stars and the media, they need each other, feed off each other. And the media doesn't come any bigger than Uncle Horace."
Katz wasn't convinced, fuchsia lips screwing up petulantly, but Adrian nudged her quiet. He was wearing a white jacket, black bow tie, a red rose tucked into his buttonhole. Stunningly handsome. And he'd silenced Katz from spouting off inanely because he knew she was still supposed to be shaken over Grandpa's death. Her feelings mattered to him. The Rolls dipped down into the giant Castlewood Condominium's underground garage. Horace Jepson had his own private park on the second level. Thick metal doors swung open as the chauffeur showed his card to the lock. Stephen Wellborn and Rachel Griffith, Julia's two bodyguards, hurried out of the trail car as the little convoy came to a halt. Both of them were wearing formal evening dress, Stephen in a dinner jacket, Rachel in a long navy blue gown. Their alert faces scanned the stark, brightly lit concrete cave. They needn't have bothered. Two of Horace's own security staff were waiting for them. There was a distinct air of farce about the entire scene, but Julia was careful not to show disapproval. Stephen and Rachel were just doing their job, and she got on quite well with them. Stephen had been with her for years, almost since she came to Europe, a 27-year-old with sandy hair that she teased him was already thinning. He was sympathetic about her circumstances, and his discretion had been demonstrated time and again, considering the schoolgirl truancies which he could have told her grandfather about. Rachel had been with her for about a year, a 22-year-old with neat, close-cut, mousy hair, She came across as a mix of big sister and maiden aunt. Courteous, but an absolute stickler for security protocol, always checking the toilet cubicle first, which could get embarrassing. Of course, one day she might be very glad of them. Besides, any complaints would find their way back to Morgan Walshaw, and then there'd be another bloody lecture. The five of them squeezed into the penthouse lift. Katz and Adrian didn't notice the press, lost in a private world of furtive smirks and hungry looks. Julia gritted her teeth. The lift opened straight into the vestibule of Horace Jepson's suite. Music and conversation hit them as the doors slid apart. On her previous visits, the center of the penthouse had been divided up into various function areas by hand-painted Japanese silk screens, depicting scenes from mythological battles, samurai, and improbable creatures. Now the screens had all been folded back against the walls, leaving one big open space. Colored jelly blobs of hologram light swam through the air, wobbling in time to a loud acid-thrash version of Brown Sugar. Bodies packed the black-tiled dance floor, a rainbow riot of frantic movement. Older, sweating men with younger, energetic girls. More people lined the vestibule walls under the umbrella of fern fronds, drinking, chattering excitedly. She recognized a lot of faces from the channels. Trust Uncle Horace. There was nothing refined about this party. It was deliberate Dionysian overload without a refuge, forcing you to enjoy. She wondered if he'd have a topless model bursting out of a cake at some point. More than likely. Horace Jepson broke free of the crowd, shooing away a girl who had the glossy vibrancy and dazzling pout of a playmate. He was smiling warmly at Julia. A genuine smile, she thought. Then it flickered slightly as he took her in, as though she'd come in the wrong sort of dress or something. But she'd chosen a 5,000-pound Domani gown, pale pink silk with a mermaid tail skirt. Nothing like as tarty as the rest of the girls she could see, so that couldn't be it. His smile had mellowed by the time he reached her. He took both her hands and gave her a demure peck on the cheek. It was almost saddening. He used to give her big bear hugs and a huge slobbery kiss. Funny, she'd always hated them at the time. Now they were a part of an old familiar world, lost and gone for good.
"I was afraid you weren't going to come," he said.
"Try keeping me for a party."
"That's my gal. Say, look, I'm real sorry about Phil. One of the best, you know."
Behavioral response. Sorrow. She'd loaded the program in the processor node to remind her, keyed by any mention of Grandpa. For her to giggle at his name, at people's earnest sympathy, would never do.
"Thank you. Do something for me, Uncle Horace."
"Sure, honey.
Don't treat me like glass. I won't break. And it only makes it worse."
"Right."
He grinned at Katerina and Adrian.
"Come on in, you guys. We're just getting warmed up. Plenty of action here tonight."
Julia thought his glance hovered around Katz's cleavage. Then he was looking over her shoulder at Stephen and Rachel, a faintly puzzled expression on his face as Katz dragged Adrian past him into the throng.
"No escort, Julia?"
"Afraid not."
"Al, gal, why didn't you let me know? Cindy could have fixed something up for you. That girl's got a list of boys bigger than a census bureau."
"Maybe next time."
"Damn, Clifford won't be over before the weekend. He would have done just fine. You met Cliff before? My boy? For my first marriage?"
"You've mentioned him," she said dryly, had the two of them walking down the aisle in his mind.
"Oh, well, let me introduce you to a few people. Hey, maybe I can have one dance. Make an old man happy."
"I think your friend would scratch my eyes out first."
She nodded at the playmate girl.
"Ouch, Julia. There's a lot of Philip in you,"
he said admiringly. She quashed the laugh while it was still in her gullet. Sorrow.
"Good, because I'd like to do some business with you."
Horace Jepson suddenly became wary.
"Most of Globecast's contract with Event Horizon are pretty much cut and dried."
"Well, not formal business, more a favor."
"Go on."
"There's a program I might want broadcasting. It's important to me, Uncle Horace."
"What sort of program?"
he asked, cautiously.
"A planet-wide expose. Every current affairs channel Globecast owns."
Now his face really fell.
"Julia, honey, do you know the kind of legal angles on this? I mean, if you're really hot and rubbishing someone, then hearsay ain't no use."
"I've got the proof, all we need."
"Damn, but I wish you didn't grow up so fast."
Kendrick DiGirolamo was at the party, and Hermione. Julia didn't know when they'd arrived. Kendrick was his usual oily, suave self, dancing with a girl who made the playmate look like a hag. Their eyes met and held. She gave him a cool, level gaze, quietly satisfied at the startled light in his eyes, quickly hidden. He knew full well she couldn't stand the sight of him, expected a girlish glare, a tossed head, flouncing off in a huff. Instead, he got a dispassionate assessment from a multi-billionaireess. Small wonder he was surprised, hopefully concerned. Squirm, she wished him silently. Her eyes moved on sedately, showing him how little he mattered, fighting the impulse to whoop for joy. It had begun. Horace Jepson had hired a 5-piece rock band for the evening, the Fifth Horsemen, their axemen tooled up with reasonable copies of Fenders. They were dressed in torn T-shirts, studded leathers, and thigh-length boots. Clean, though, Julia noticed. But they were a tight outfit for all their synthetic attitude, the rhythm pumping out of their gorilla stacks hot and fast. The singer had a Ziggy Stardust stripe across his face, 3D paint opening into middle distance. She danced with Bill Yee Samanza to a number that could have been 5 years. Uncle Horace had introduced them, interest in her name and wealth finally penetrating the megastar's syntho stupor. Basking in the jealousy which lashed out in tangible waves from the other girls, his skin was smooth and shiny from plastique, his voice slurred. He groped her backside and asked if she fancied a quick trip to one of the bedrooms. The band finished their stuff, and they parted, his reputation upheld. Seeing Katz standing on a table trying to bunt her down a long glass of champagne to the boisterous cheers of an admiring audience of young blades, the hologram blobs congregated around her legs in a silent red and green swarm, floating up inside her skirt. Adrian hovering on the sidelines, tolerant, fixed smile, talking to a young French finance manager who was helping Uncle Horace to expand Globecast into Europe. He was nervous about her, stammering, telling her about the investment ratios of various gilt stocks and the new junk bond markets opening in South America. She turned down his invitation to dance. Boring. Kendrick offering a gentlemanly hand to Katz as she climbed down off the table, face flushed. He handed her a drink. Hermione joined them, palpably excited. Laser fans swept across the trio, sparkling off jewels, teeth, lips, fluorescing Katz's cloud of hair into an electric pink halo. A dance with Adrian, doing his duty. A smoochy number, so he'd have to hold her close. Swaying rhythmically with the feel of his hard body pressed against hers, his hands on her back.
"You dance well," she told him.
"Oh, yeah, thanks."
Distracted. She shivered beneath his hands. Kendrick and Katz dancing. She was hanging on to every word he uttered, both laughing ebulliently, plainly delighted with each other's company. Her body flowed with the music, lost to the beat, wild and sensual. Half a dance with Uncle Horace, his face red and puffing as he gave up, leading her over to the seafood buffet. Picking out their food together, Horace with something to say about every dish, urging her to sample. His own plate piled high. Divine crabs. A cocktail that took the bartender an elaborate 3 minutes to prepare. Only it tasted like orange juice that someone had spilled vinegar into. She flashed him a smile, saying how wonderful it was, and poured it into the punch bowl when no one was looking, green ice swan sculpture and all. Kendrick and Katz, nearly alone on the dance floor, doing the lambada, adoration in her eyes. She chatted to the playmate girl, whose name was Cindy, and was actually a data compression expert. So much for first impressions. Cindy was raucous and worldly wise, and had lots of funny stories about men in general. A life lived in the fast lane with no regrets. She hung on to every word. Cindy gave her a window on the kind of world she so rarely glimpsed. Cindy was well into a completely unbelievable recital of her recent Spanish holiday when both of them became aware of the shouting. The Fifth Horseman ground to a halt in a dissonant metallic skirl. Adrian, Kendrick, and Katz stood in the middle of the dance floor, two against one. Katz stood beside Kendrick, breathing heavily, sweat darkened tassel ends of her hair sticking to her shoulders. Hologram blobs orbited the trio slowly. "Enough!" Adrian yelled. Kendrick raised a warning finger.
Go home, little boy. You're making a fool of yourself.
I'll go, all right. You people make me want to puke. And you're coming with me. He tried to grab Katerina, but she dodged nimbly behind Kendrick.
No way, she shrilled. I'm having some real fun. First time in bloody ages, too.
Julia knew Katz well enough to see how she was loving the scene, milking it, the center of attention. All the glitzy people she worshipped were focusing on her, asking who she was, a girl so desirable she was worth fighting over in public. Kendrick grinned.
That seems pretty plain, little boy. Go play somewhere else.
Come on, Adrian entreated. His fists were clenched, face beaming hatred at his rival. Kendrick's arm snaked protectively round Katerina, his hand squeezing her breast.
I do so detest these revolting peasants. Why don't you and I go somewhere quieter? My yacht is anchored in the marina.
Katerina's face was flushed with triumph. She tossed her head.
Sounds good. Better than anything Mr. 10 Centimeters here ever offered me.
Kendrick roared with laughter. There were snickers from the guests. Adrian paled, staring at Katerina in complete and abject incomprehension. There was a voice inside Julia's skull, pleading at her to rush over and throw her arms round Adrian. He was too honest, too decent for this to be happening to him. Somehow she managed to keep her feet in place, clinging magnetically to the black tiles. Kendrick and Katerina turned as one, walking away. Adrian stared at their departing backs. His hands had fallen limply to his side.
Katie!
He called after her. She let out a playful squeal as Kendrick pinched her rump, giggling, never looking round.
Katie!
Julia closed damp eyes. The music boomed again. Julia waited for 5 days after the party before she sat in the chair at the head of the study table and called Kendrick. The arrangements with Globecast had taken a while to finalize, but Uncle Horace had come through in the end, God bless him. And then there was her nerve to screw up. When the phone's flat screen activated, Kendrick was sitting on the aft deck of his yacht, the marina forming a bright, enticing backdrop, slightly out of focus. The sight of him stiffened her own resolution. He was wearing a lemon-yellow silk shirt, open at the neck, looking supremely relaxed, impenetrably black glasses covering his eyes, just the right amount of stubble shading his chin, emphasizing masculinity. It was a calculated pose, she thought, intended to demonstrate the ease with which he moved through life, his authority and influence, the epitome of an international wheeler-dealer. It was working, too, the effect seeping out through the screen to abrade her own confidence. She gripped the armrests on her chair against the impulse to smooth down her hair, wishing she'd taken some time to straighten out her own appearance. Her blouse was nothing special, a 150-pound Malcolm. She'd already worn it a couple of times before. She should have worn a Chanel suit.
Hermione was only saying the other day we don't see enough of you, Julia, Kendrick said. It's such a pity. We're having a party here on the Miriam tomorrow night, nothing formal. Why don't you come along? A lovely young girl like you ought to involve herself socially. Katerina tells me you don't have many friends. That makes me so sad.
Julia didn't trust herself to speak for a moment. That little cow Katz had told him that. How he and that dyke Hermione must have laughed. God, what else had she told them?
I'm afraid I'm a very busy person nowadays, Mr. Di Girolamo. I'm in industry, you see, not finance. It means I have to work for a living.
Julia, please. What is all this, Mr. Di Girolamo? I am Kendrick, your friend. Your grandfather's friend.
Bullshit. Grandpa tolerated you, I won't. Don't think I don't know what you're after.
After, Julia?
Ranasfari's project. That's what it was all about, right?
He smiled a wounded smile.
So much of your late grandfather you have inherited. You are a straight talker. I respect that, Julia. It is a rare commodity. Pleasing in this world of deceit. So in return I, too, will be a straight talker. You have to tolerate me, or at least my family house. It's in our contract. Unbreakable.
The smile hardened.
A profitable arrangement all round.
I've had my financial division draw up a buyout agreement. Your house will be well compensated. And you expect our house to agree to this? Julia, you are more naive than I thought. Multi-billion euro-franc contracts are not torn up because of schoolgirl temper tantrums.
You are the house's representative in the consortium. Your family will accept your judgment in this matter.
And my judgment is no.
You won't like the alternative.
Threats, Julia. Has it come to this? And with what will you threaten me?
A scandal?
She was disappointed by how hollow it sounded. A whole complex of doubts was rising. She'd banked so much on forcing Kendrick to accept the buyout, never even considered he would refuse. There was no way now she could mitigate failure. Kendrick chortled delightedly.
A scandal? In this world? In this day and age? Scandal is dependent on perspective, Julia. You smuggle 3.5 million euro francs worth of gear into Scotland every night. Isn't that a scandal? Everyone knows I am a lovable rogue. Certainly your dear grandfather did. After all, Event Horizon bought all those templates from me.
The Mimox crystal spoiler.
Yes. I heard your orbiting furnaces were producing a depressing amount of contaminated crystals. How unfortunate for you.
The rest of the consortium would be very upset to hear that you plan to steal Event Horizon's assets, don't you think? It might be difficult for the Di Girolamo house to find partners after that.
Fantasy, he said,
but there was no smile anymore. She let go of the armrests and placed her hands on the table, pleased by how steady they were. The onus is on proof, of course. Even if I could prove your involvement, the family would simply disown you, claim they weren't involved, which they possibly weren't. The house could survive your fall. What the house would not tolerate is for you to drag them down with you.
An admirable summary, he mocked. So where is this alleged proof?
She played the terminal keys, squirting data over to the yacht's gear cubes. First, understand I am not bluffing. See this? It's Globecast's Pan-Europe channel schedule for next Tuesday. The Investigator Chronicle documentary is going to be given over to you, Kendrick. I'm going to make you a star. All the data my security people turned up on your crystal spoiler operation was passed on to the program's researchers. We even found them a re-entry capsule to show. It was bobbing about among Westland's wreckage. You know about those capsules, Kendrick. They're the sort Seabrook Orbital assembled up at Xanthus.
No, Julia, I do not know.
Wrong.
She called up her ace from the terminal's memory core.
Take a good look, Kendrick. That's a transfer order for 8 million euro francs to be paid into the account of the newly formed Seabrook Orbital Company from your family house 11 months ago. And, Kendrick, it's your authority code on the order. You own Seabrook Orbital, and the Di Girolamo house funded it.
She requested the terminal to show the second transfer order.
Then, 5 months later, you went and repaid the money without any interest. Money you recovered from selling the Mimox crystals. My money, Kendrick. Did they know? Did you tell them you were borrowing family money to finance your own schemes?
He was hunched over his terminal cube, studying the two transfer orders without a trace of humor left.
Where did you get these? He demanded.
A crow's feet wrinkle indented the skin on either side of his mouth as his lips compressed.
The Credit Corato Bank, of course.
Impossible. They are forgeries.
Julia felt the tension drain out of her. She leant back into the chair and grinned wickedly at the screen.
No forging involved. Accessing the bank's records is the president's prerogative. So is waiving client confidentiality, though I don't intend to make it a habit.
President?
Shock raised his voice an octave.
I bought it. Well, 53% anyway. Quite a good investment, actually, according to my accountants. I'm the Di Girolamo Finance House's new partner. How does that grab you?
Bitch, he breathed.
Careful, Kendrick. I might just lower my offer. Schoolgirl temperament, you see.
You bought the bank?
He sounded incredulous.
Yeah.
You bought the bank just to make me authorize the buyout?
Yeah.
He looked from the cube to the phone screen and back again, bewildered.
How much did all this cost you?
Plenty, but it was worth it.
I don't believe this. Do you hate me that much?
What do you think, Kendrick? She asked,
her voice dangerously shaky.
I think you are impulsive, dear Julia. If you go on frittering events horizon away like this, there will be nothing left in a few years.
What would your grandfather think of that?
Behavioral response, sorrow. But she didn't need the reminder, not anymore.
He shared my opinion of you, she murmured.
Indeed?
And if I don't authorize your buyout offer?
She shrugged.
The Chronicle people get a copy of the transfer orders. They'll go ahead and broadcast then. Without them, the program would be one big libel case.
Kendrick squared his shoulders, clearing his throat, salvaging what dignity he could. Very well, Julia. If that's the way you want it.
His capitulation left her feeling omnipotent. As soon as his image vanished, she called Adrian. It was a formality. She knew she was on a winning streak. Get a grip on yourself, girl, she told herself sternly. You must look balmy with this grin plastered across your face. People would cross the street to avoid you. But the grin remained. Then Adrian appeared on the screen, and all the wonder blew away in a blast of trepidation, chilling her heart. He'd lost his verve. The chirpy smile and devilish glint were gone. Broken-hearted. Just how hung up on cats had he been?
Hello, Julia. Nice to see you.
The words said it, but not the voice. That was funereal. Had she called too soon?
Sorry to bother you, Adrian. I can call back if it's not convenient.
No, please. I'm deep into cell composition right now. God, it's dull.
Oh, well, that's something. At least I'm more interesting than an amoeba.
He looked blank for a second, then smiled sheepishly.
That did come out wrong, didn't it?
Not to worry. Look, I wouldn't have called, but I need this truly enormous favor, and I don't know who else to turn to.
What?
There was a flicker of interest.
Well, there's this publishing company which is throwing a big book launch party next weekend, and I've got to go. It's a social obligation. Event Horizon won the contract to supply them with Memoxes, you see. Only the embarrassing thing is, I haven't got anyone to go with. The business keeps me so busy right now, I don't get to meet people my age.
He scratched the back of his neck, staring at the floor, looking very unhappy.
I don't know, Julia.
I've got to find someone, Adrian. People would think I'm funny if I just keep turning up to these events by myself all the time. It'll only be for the weekend. I could have the car pick you up. You wouldn't miss any lectures.
Oh, I see.
A grin plucked at his mouth.
Well, we can't have people thinking that now, can we?
I'd be honored. They sorted out details, and she signed off, glowing. Yes. He'd said yes. Honored.